The Pat Kenny Show.
With the Jaguar E-Pace. Beautiful by design and dynamic to drive. Delivering performance that is unmistakably Jaguar.
This is News Talk.
We all know someone who's been impacted by metastatic breast cancer or ovarian cancer. Well, a conference taking place this week, but starting tonight with a public meeting at the Herbert Park Hotel at 6:30, will be of interest to all of those who have been affected by these conditions. And to tell us about the latest breakthroughs in the treatment of women's cancers, Professor John Crown. John, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat.
Now, this is a big deal, this conference.
It is, Pat. There are really two meetings. Tonight at 6:30, we have a very special meeting. It's aimed at patients, their family, loved ones, carers, and the general public, anyone who's interested in the problem of women's cancers. The meeting is called Dare to Cure. It's the latest in a series of meetings which the Cancer Clinical Research Trust has held pretty much annually, aimed at the public to try and improve knowledge about where we are in research which may be of relevance to cancer patients.
Now, the term Dare to Cure, what are you saying? Are you saying there are mechanisms which could lead to a cure that we are not emboldened to use, or what does that title mean?
I've been involved in cancer research and treatment since the 1980s, Pat. It's always been my dream that I would see more cancers curable than was the case when I started. Thankfully, I've lived long enough to see many cancers become curable that were not curable then, and I still dare to dream that some of the cancers which we think of now, which the textbooks say are incurable, will become curable. And I think that should be the focus of our research.
What sort of things will people hear tonight?
They will hear, broadly speaking, two areas tonight. Metastatic breast cancer refers to the breast cancers that sadly have spread to other parts of the body. Many patients are cured of early stage breast cancer, but when breast cancer is fatal, when people die from it, it is because the disease has spread to involve other parts of the body.
Just a technical thing, are there breast cancers that never spread, or is every breast cancer potentially metastatic?
They all have varying degrees of spread. There are some of them that we now know are at extremely low risk of spread. And in fact, one of the great breakthroughs in recent years has been the identification of those patients who do not need to take chemotherapy because their chance of spreading is very small and can be reduced further by simpler anti-estrogen hormone type treatments. But sadly, roughly, I guess the rule of thumb would be somewhere about one third of breast cancers in Western countries will ultimately spread. And if these cancers spread to other parts of the body, they are, with few exceptions, currently considered not curable. Now, again, I put a little codicil in that because I'm delighted to say that there is one subgroup of those cancers which I believe it's not cured as frequently as I'd like it to be, but definitely is curable, and that's the group that have an alteration called the HER2 alteration. But for most patients, when breast cancer is spread, the goals of treatment are control, not cure. And Pat, the control is much better. Patients now typically live for many years following a diagnosis of secondary breast cancer, but sadly, very few of them are cured.
Okay, that's one of your topics tonight. What else?
Gynecological cancer. Obviously, gynecological cancer has been the focus of great public interest and scrutiny over the last years because of the issues that arose with respect to cervical screening. Interestingly, there was a wonderful paper in the New England Journal of Medicine last week which really has shown how in the United States now, death from cervical cancer has declined so dramatically over the years. And it's all due to cervical cancer screening. It's an imperfect technology. But Lord, if you want to do something to reduce the number of patients in a population who die of cervical cancer, screening is very good.
And again, when we've been covering this scandal, as it was characterised, we've pointed out again and again that a screening programme is not a diagnostic programme.
No, it's not. If somebody presents to a doctor with a worry about their breast or a worry about a gynecological symptom, reaching for the kind of mammogram we would do to screen a population or for a pap smear in the case of cervical cancer would not be the route of testing you would follow. You would do more detailed tests. But these are good tests if you want to take a population of women and reduce the number of them who die from that cancer. That's what these tests achieve.
So anyone who is affected or interested in this kind of area can go along to the Herbert Park Hotel, 6:30 tonight, and it's a public meeting.
Yes.
Everyone welcome.
We have two great guest speakers. One of them is Dr. Linda Vedat, who's a wonderful medical oncologist from New York, from Memorial Sloan Kettering, and she will talk about the latest advances in metastatic breast cancer, which there have been quite a few recently. And the other speaker is our own Professor Donald Brennan, who is one of the country's experts on gynecological cancer. And one of the areas Donald will focus on tonight, there really in the last few months have been some exciting new data for some drugs which we think should be more widely available in the treatment of ovarian cancer. These are drugs which are either given together with chemotherapy or following the completion of chemotherapy, which generally prolong the duration of disease control and for some subgroups of patients prolong it very dramatically.
What is limiting that availability?
Well, at the moment, they're not routinely available in Ireland for reasons of approval, reimbursement and health economics. And I do understand the difficult circumstances in which the health service finds itself trying to pay for everything. But the reality is I really do hope now that there will be a serious look at making these drugs available for patients with ovarian cancer. They haven't had a lot of good news in recent years, and this really is a little shot in the arm. Only about 40 to 45% of ovarian cancer patients live 5 years. And, you know, when we have some new tools available to us to try and nudge that upwards, I think we should try and make them available.
And are tests available as to which cohort of patients would benefit from these drugs and others who might not benefit at all?
Well, it's very interesting, Pat. There is a subgroup of ovarian cancer patients who have a gene called the BRCA genes. And the BRCA genes are famous for predisposing to breast cancer. Everybody will remember the Angelina Jolie story. But they also predispose to ovarian cancer. And for patients that have ovarian cancer and have a BRCA gene, there's been good evidence that the other newer group of drugs, the PARP inhibitors, really can make quite a big difference. But interestingly, the data which were presented recently suggest that even those who do not have a BRCA gene can benefit in some cases from those treatments. And there are another group of patients who don't have the BRCA gene but have other genetic characteristics of their cancer which make them behave a little bit like a BRCA gene carrier, and the drugs are also very effective in that setting.
Now, moving on to what's happening on Thursday and Friday, you've got the experts flying in to talk to the experts, I suppose.
We have a phenomenal meeting. About in 2001, Dr. Dennis Lehman, who is a wonderful, wonderful man, who I do hope in the next couple of years will have a Nobel Prize to go on his already very full mantelpiece, the man who discovered the research which led to Herceptin, an advance which has saved probably hundreds of thousands or maybe millions of lives around the world. He and I started having an annual meeting. It alternated between Dublin and Los Angeles, and it was a unique meeting. It was called a meeting on translational research in oncology. And translational research was a new word then. Translational research meant that it tried to bring the clinicians, the doctors who treated patients in hospitals at the bedside, together with the laboratory workers who were mm-hmm. doing stuff which often seemed very irrelevant to what we were doing. And there was a need for such a meeting because it became apparent by the late 1990s that what the scientists were doing wasn't quite as egg-heady and irrelevant as it sometimes seemed to be to the clinicians, but it had advanced to such an extent that it was now technologically possible to use these advances to discover new kinds of cancer drugs. And indeed, about 20 years ago, two cancer drugs emerged which have absolutely been transformative. One of them was Herceptin. Another one was probably an even bigger impact in a rarer disease, a drug called imatinib or Gleevec, for a kind of leukemia. When I was a young doctor in training in oncology, I used to hate chronic myeloid leukemia more than anything because you'd see often young, healthy people who had this awful disease, and they just knew they had a death sentence. They would live quite well, quite normally, go to work, bring their kids to school for about 2 years, and then in the third year, everything would go horribly wrong. And tremendous research by a few people in the U.S., mainly Dr. Drucker, who also should get a Nobel Prize one of these days, discovered that one simple tablet brought this disease under incredible control. And patients who were diagnosed 20 years ago with this condition are now still alive, taking the tablet or a derivative tablet every day. So inspired by these events, we decided we would have the meeting. And for about 8 or 9 years, it alternated between Dublin and Los Angeles. It was a very big meeting in those days. It cost lots of money to run the meeting. And it kind of fell afoul of the recession in 2008. And about 5 years ago, I reactivated the meeting in Dublin only on a much smaller budget. We pride ourselves in the Cancer Clinical Research Trust on being an incredibly lean, no-waste, low-overhead organization. We have one sainted person, Dr. Karen Culhan, who does all of our conference organizing, does all of our HRP, or does everything for us. A wonderful, wonderful person. And we now have a meeting which attracts about 150 attendees, but more importantly, we get 30 international speakers. They all speak for free. We managed to make the meeting pay for itself. We get drug company sponsorship to pay for the meeting. It pays for the cost of the meeting, but none of the speakers get paid. And it's just a unique opportunity to hear of all of the cutting edge new drugs that may be in clinical trials in patients next year or in the next couple of years.
Now, this idea of translational medicine, linking the lab with the clinician, does it mean that you get quicker clinical trials, for instance? Does it mean that you get quicker drug development so that, someone can cling on and know that in 2 years' time, a drug is actually going to be clinically available and approved?
I'm having that conversation with patients on a nearly daily basis now. I'm telling them, hang on in there. you know, people say to me, what is the chance that I'll be alive? And typically, if somebody is diagnosed with newly diagnosed secondary breast cancer, they say, well, what's the average survival? And I'll say, well, for the kind you have, the average survival, I'm afraid it's not generally curable, but the average survival is now past 5 years. And you know what? I don't know what I'll be offering for treatment in 3 years, 4 years, and 5 years from now. It might be something wonderful. Maybe we'll be talking about curing it, or maybe living for 10 years.
Well, it sounds like a very exciting meeting for the clinicians and the researchers sharing that information on, if you like, a closed and professional level. But tonight at 6:30 in the Herbert Park Hotel, everyone is welcome for this public meeting.
Thank you very much.